So this is the ins and outs of opening a B&B or a guest house or an Airbnb or a VRBO. It's all that short-term rental stuff that you're interested in knowing about. And we've even extended it to some midterm because a midterm rental is kind of a hybrid between a short-term and a long-term. You kind of set it up like a short-term, but then you kind of collect the rent and pay like bed tax and that sort of thing, like a long term. So you don't have some of those taxes. So that's why that midterm is kind of a hybrid for the folks that are listening in. So welcome to Beth, Debbie, Julia, and Olivia so far. And so you can say hello in the chat. And if you have any questions, put that in the chat. We see that Debbie is from Ohio. Beth is from Massachusetts. And she's thinking about getting into short-term rentals. Julia says hi, so welcome, welcome. And we're going to get started. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kelly. She is the CEO of Cronin's Castles. It's a curated group of three unique spaces offering magical vacations. And you're going to have to tell me, how do you pronounce the city in Puerto Rico? How do you say
That's
that?
Vieques Island, Puerto Rico.
Vieques. I wasn't sure how to say that. I can't even say the one in Alaska. Oh my gosh. How do you say
Alaska is
that one?
Ksila.
Ksila. That's not
Ksila,
how I would
Alaska.
pronounce that. So in Alaska, and then Indianola, Utah. So if you want to have a dinner picnic on a deserted magnetic black sand beach or take painting lessons with one or more of 9,000 wild horses as your subject, how fun is that? We have you covered. So if going dog sledding and warming up in front of the fire with a cup of hot cocoa and a windowed 360-degree view of the Northern Lights. Oh, okay. You had me at Northern Lights. Yep, I get that. It's on my bucket list. Then if that's your style, no problem. Alternately, turn up the speed in a snowmobile or on a UTV before soaking more muscles in the two-person hot tub in Utah. So wow. Wow, Kelly. Tell us, what is your background before you decided to do this? Tell us what your background is.
I've been in veterinary medicine for 32 years. And veterinary medicine is a tough one because it's a labor of love. We don't get paid much. My entire lifetime of working in veterinary medicine, I've made $10 to $20 an hour. And so I knew I had to do something different in order to be able to retire someday. And I've always saved about 50% of my income by house hacking and travel hacking and just making sure that I live below my means. And I've never had a life of deprivation. I've just been a little bit gamier about it. And so got really into the idea of doing a hosting because I love what it can look like. You guys can hear that in the background. That is the sound of Vieques nightlife going on there. It's so
I love
fun.
it.
It's so great.
Yes, I love it. Yes.
And here's a life that I can live where in between, traveling for work as a veterinary manager, I can come to places like Vieques and Ksila and like stay in amazing places and call it work. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. So where did you live? Because these are so far apart. I mean, we're talking Puerto Rico, Alaska, Utah. Where did you grow up? I mean, where did you live before you decided to do this?
So I grew up in Wisconsin and I've
Okay.
lived long term in New Mexico and Alaska and Wisconsin. But I've been to every state. And so one of the things that I've done over the time period is I have a bucket list of states that I would really like to have, B&B or short-term rentals at because you can't get enough of them. And I really think that there's something to be said for choosing places that ignite your soul and that you yourself would really like to go to, because how easy is marketing the image that I sent you, which, is just
For those that are listening, she sent me a picture of what she said. This is what my view is right now. And it was beautiful. I mean, it was just amazingly beautiful. And that's your view right now, where you are right now.
So we came off the beach just because it's dark and you can't see anything anymore. Now we're at a pizza restaurant that has the most amazing pizza called Boracua Pizza with the most random plantain and so, oh my gosh, if you ever get to Vieques, Puerto Rico, and I hope you do because it's incredible from stop to start. It has just the best food in the world. It's Mamma Mia's Pizza, and y'all should come here.
Oh, Okay, that's an invitation. You heard her. She said you all should come there. And, yep. and she's got the place. All you have to do is let her know. We're going to put those links in the chat so everybody can reach out to Kelly. But in the meantime, where were you in your career when you decided that you wanted to do short-term rentals? What were you doing at the time before you were doing the short-term rentals?
So I was still actually working as a technician when I first started.
Okay.
And like a lot of people, I think I fell into it, into renting in general. And what I'll say is that, you know, we just couldn't sell our house in New Mexico because it was very off-grid, very far away. It was on a reservation. It was a land lease. If you guys know what that means, it means that the Pueblo actually owns the land that it sits on. And so when we were looking to, you know, to get rid of that house, I just couldn't move it. And so we rented it instead. And there was just something so impactful with watching our wealth grow in somebody else paying the mortgage and in, you know, just the growth and how much that home value was. And it just, it was a double blessing to be able to rent it. And we had a good renter for about 5 years.
Okay. Now, so rented it long-term originally.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what we ended up doing was we ended up putting it up for sale again. Just when she decided that she wanted to purchase a home, we tried to work her through, you know, home purchasing our house on a land lease. Couldn't quite get that done. She never could quite get enough money saved to do a down payment, even though we tried to do a reverse mortgage and things like that for her, or, you know, a growth mortgage. And so we ended up selling to someone else on what's called a for sale, what's called an owner finance. And so that's where we carry the note for the house. And when you do that, you have to really think about having all of your loan paid off in order to be able to do that legally. But it was a real win-win for us, just because then we had some operating capital to start looking at some short terms in places that, you know, are really gonna, you know, make us happy in addition to making us money. And I think that that's a really incredible way of building a business.
So you wanted to sell there so that you could basically relocate to these wonderful places that you have now. How did you find, which one was the first one? Which one was the first one that you did?
So the very first one was we attempted to buy a tiny home cabin on the Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin River. And it was just this little cabin that you would have been able to get in a tube, like an inner tube.
Okay.
And tube or kayak your way down to lunch in downtown Dells. You could, you know, fish from the house. You could do all of these great things. You could watch the sunset over the river. It was an incredible place. Unfortunately, the seller lied about an easement, and there was no easement to the property.
Oh, so, no.
Yep. And then the second try was actually a RV park that we were going to turn into a tiny home, place. You know, kind of like a mobile home park, but for our tiny homes, and had all of the business financing done, like every I dotted, every T crossed. Come to find out, it was a dirty title. So there was unfortunately 30 other people on the title.
Oh no. And of course, then you had to get all 30 to sign off for this deal to happen.
And most of them are, you know, it was a very long time ago. So most of them are dead. Who knows what family rights are, things like that. It was not a clean enough deal to actually move forward, even though it was the most beautiful place in Tierra Amarilla, New Mexico that you've ever seen. And so the third one that we looked at was actually Vieques, Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And what I'll say is that we ended up here very, very haphazardly. We went on a vacation because my daughter and I were trying to hit all 50 states.
Okay.
And in the process of hitting all 50 states, we came to Puerto Rico. And, you know, like I say, we travel hack all over the place. So came to Puerto Rico very last minute, showed up on a weekend. She made friends with some 9-year-olds. They're still friends to this day. And the 9-year-old's family said, oh gosh, it's too bad tomorrow. We're going to Vieques. And I said, well, I don't know where that is, but I don't have hotel reservations. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And so It's an hour and a half ferry ride from San Juan, and then an hour and a half taxi ride, and then a short ferry ride, about 30-minute ferry ride from San Juan. $3 ferry, $2 ferry, I should say. And then
that's crazy. I love it.
Yeah. And we hopped off the ferry, and my daughter steps out into the road, and a herd of wild horses runs past her. And
oh, then, my goodness.
Going the other direction, a bunch of baby chickens just run past her, and we were done. Like, we were in love with the place. And so we stayed for a couple of days. We kept seeing Se Vende signs, which means for sale. And it's just amazing to see how many places there are actually available. And you wouldn't know it from like Zillow or something like that. But after that time period, I said, gosh, it would be amazing if I could afford something on this island. And what I'll tell you is that you can. It's pretty affordable. So we actually ended up getting ours on half owner financing. Okay. So I got it for $73,000, a little 850 square foot island home, really cute little round house with a lofted bedroom, second bedroom, I should say. And, you know, horses that visit you every day, and a porch to sit on and drink your rum drink and hang out in your hammock and get visited by our lawn ornament, green iguana named Bob, or our other lawn ornament, a one-eyed rooster named Willie.
I love it. Know,
head out into your yard and pick some papaya and fresh mango for breakfast, and then go find some eggs from some of the chickens. And it's just paradise.
I can see that's just perfect. So that was your first one. And then, So now you've sold the house where you were living. So now where were you living at this time? I mean, if you could officially say where you were living, where was that?
So we actually, not long after moving out of New Mexico, we actually purchased a house in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I got it on a foreclosure deal. So I got a 5,000 square foot house with three different living spaces on foreclosure for $180,000. It's worth about $420,000 now. And it's an amazing 100-year-old, beautiful historic home, mostly renovated. And then I did the rest of the renovations, including a kitchen and a couple bathrooms. Added another bathroom, and we were off to the races with a rentable space and a place for my parents to live downstairs.
All of a sudden you're house hacking still. So this is a house you can live in. You have a section for you, a section you can rent, and a section for parents.
Yes.
I love that.
And it's a beautiful house. Like, it is an incredible, we have three bedrooms upstairs. We have two bedrooms downstairs. There's an extra sunroom downstairs. There's a formal living room and dining room downstairs. There's a former living room upstairs, and then there's a kitchenette, a bathroom, and effectively an efficiency bedroom that is rentable and pays the mortgage.
Okay. And so at that point, that becomes your hub. That's where you always go back to, is to that house. Okay.
Yeah.
I get that. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I just made Kelly a co-host. I heard a little bit of a snag there in the video. So if for some reason I get bumped off, Kelly can let me back in. And if she gets bumped off, I can let her back in. And so I did make her a co-host just now, just in case I should be the one to get bumped off. Because that has happened occasionally, not often, but occasionally. So now you've got your home base. You found this amazing property in Puerto Rico. And so now when you're not there in Puerto Rico, you are renting that out as a short-term renter, a rental. How do you manage, the property at that point? And first of all, you're so spread out between Puerto Rico and Alaska and Utah. Did you have to go through zoning in each of those areas?
So that's part of why it's really attractive to actually do the places that we've done, is because there just isn't zoning at all.
So you didn't have to jump over the moon trying to get somebody to say, yes, you're allowed to do a short-term rental. I get it. Yeah. I get it. And they're beautiful places that people want to go.
Yeah. So people like the off-gridness. But what I'll say is that our Utah house, we actually had to let go earlier this month. And we made a pretty profit on it, so it was fine, but we could not get Utah to agree that 250 square feet was a house.
Okay. I get it. I get it.
And we had the Tiny Home Association coming to bat for us, but it just could not be done.
Okay. And so you did have to let that one go then, because just because of the square footage of it.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it. I get it. So you couldn't even do that one as a studio.
No, and it was not a protected domicile, and it was not permitted for a build. And so when I went to get a permit for the deck, we were going to make a giant deck on the front for the cowboy hot tub and for the outdoor kitchen. And during the permitting process, they were like, hey, we can't permit something that's on an unpermitted house. And then it was built on our lot lines between two of our lots. And it just was a giant circle that we couldn't get around.
Okay. I get it. And so what you're hearing here. And so for those of you that are listening, just know sometimes it's a rocky road getting to across the finish line, and that's okay. As long as your numbers work and you know that you're going to be okay, you've got to have a plan B. If for some reason a property that you're looking at doesn't work out for a short-term rental, you've got to know what you're going to do with that so that you don't get yourself upside down financially in something and where it hurts your finances long term. So I get that. So now with the ones that you do have, how do you manage those from a distance? Do you do all the bookings on those? How you know, who does the bookings for you?
I am the queen of automation. So there are a lot of automated processes, and I use Toastfully for a lot of that automation. And then I have things
What was the platform again?
Toastfully. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for those who are listening, that is an option called Toastfully. I'm using CloudBeds, and my guess is that they're very similar. So didn't mean to interrupt you. So go ahead. So you're the queen of automation. So what else besides Toastfully?
The other thing that I do is I try to always find some caretaker that is local to the area. One, because they have a lot of contacts. So our caretaker here in Vieques, she knows the best person for cutting their lawns. She knows the best person for, oh gosh, you name it, like the best person to put on screens, the best person to buy a car from, you name it. She's got it. And then I always have a second and a third backup housekeeper. And I don't normally call them housekeepers because they really are expected to do more caretaking than housekeeping.
Okay.
And so I usually find those folks actually in kind of untraditional ways. I usually find them through Facebook Marketplace or Facebook groups that are kind of local to the area.
All right. I'm making some notes here because this is great information. All right. So now that's how you manage, you know, the flips, getting cleaned and the linens done and all of that, and the maintenance and all of that sort of thing. But what about your bookings? When you're on Toastfully, does it send your listings out to some other big online travel sites so that folks can find you?
It does. I will say that we get about 50% of our bookings straight from our website, though. So for the most part, we don't have. Thank you. I'm getting food delivered to me. This is so amazing.
Okay, perfect. Perfect.
So for the most part, we do a lot of the bookings off of the big ones, right? Like we don't do VRBO. We do Airbnb. We've played around with things like Lodge Love. But for the most part, it's just cronenscastles.com and off to the races. And so far we've had a really good experience with doing some Facebook ads, with doing a lot of podcasts. We generally don't do a lot of hosting podcasts, but more of the, you know, more of the travel podcasts so that we catch the people who are actually trying to travel to places. It's been a lot of fun, and we tend to get really quality guests because of that.
Good. I love that. So describe how you would do an actual check-in. What welcome letter or message goes out to your guest, because you can't be at all these places. So once somebody books, what goes out to the guests so that they know how to find you, how to get in, what's going to be provided? What do you send out?
Absolutely. So our welcome letter shows how to get into the lock into the house, and it actually has a video on how to do that.
Okay.
I do have the capacity to unlock from afar. So if they call me and say, hey, I can't do it, I can do it from my cell phone. I use Lockly right now.
Now, for those of you that are listening, that's called a smart lock. So, and there's different brands out there, and you can kind of go through the different smart locks and see which one works best for you. If you have something that you want to rent short term that is not real close to you, because you don't want to run over every time somebody wants to check, because you don't know when they're going to show up. So you don't want to have to camp out over there to let someone in. So I get that. So you have a smart lock, and then the video shows them how to get in that smart lock, how to use the code, that
and
sort of thing.
And a couple thoughts on that smart lock. When you're thinking about a smart lock, think about something with a battery backup, because you never know when the power is going to go out. Think about having a key on site as a backup. Think about having Wi-Fi accessibility to that smart lock so that you can change the passcode if you see too many people on your Ring camera, something like that. And then think about having that Ring camera right over the door so that you can actually see who's coming and going from your place so that you can lock out if you need to.
I love all of those. Those are all great tips, because when you're trying to manage from a distance, those are all important things to know. Yep, I get that. So again, a smart lock. And then you mentioned you have a Ring camera so you can actually see the folks coming in and out. So if two people book and 25 show up, you can then go, wait a minute, something's going on here and I need to
get involved. Allows us to hear as well. So one of the big issues that we sometimes have, although can't say that we've actually had it yet, is noise. And so having that Ring camera so that I can hear that there's potentially too much noise going on is a really incredible thing. And then we actually have a backward facing camera as well. So one that faces the door of the house, so that if somebody takes out the Ring camera, we have proof of who's actually come and gone.
Okay. So you've covered all your bases. So, wow.
Good.
That's good. That's very important stuff. And if for any of you that are on the call or listening later, and you've gone to any of those Facebook groups of people that want to have short-term rentals, you know, either Airbnb host, or there's a whole bunch of those groups out there that you can kind of peruse through their comments. Those are a lot of the complaints that they're hearing is that people showed up with, you know, too many guests, or they're too noisy, they're having a party, the neighbors are complaining. And those are all the things that you can manage if you have the right systems in place. So that's what I'm hearing from Kelly, is make sure that you get all of your systems in place before you decide to start receiving guests. So describe, do you do anything special in the mornings for the guest, or what do you provide in each of these properties? Because again, even Airbnb, it starts off with B&B. So a lot of people say, well, doesn't that mean bed and breakfast? And that's the question I always get. Do I get a breakfast? So what do you provide there?
So we don't actually do much that way. We have teas, coffees. We generally don't provide any kind of breakfast aside from what you can pick from the yard. And we do try and make our yards edible. So chicken, eggs, things like that are in the yard. And certainly free for the taking, papayas there, mangoes, etc. Just to jump back for 1 second, there's a couple things to think about beyond just the smart lock. One of which would be that if you have a way to put your heat and cool on any kind of Wi-Fi, that is a really phenomenal way as well. Generally, I like the Nest or the Ring Wi-Fi for temperature control. And then we tend to like to have smoke alarms that also work with the Ring so that we can hear if there's a smoke alarm going off.
Oh, so you have a lot of your, everything is automated into your system. So you can adjust your temperature. You can tell if the smoke alarm's going off. You can tell if there's too much noise. You can tell how many folks are coming in the door if only, you know, two or four booked and they show up with 25. So I get that. That's all great information. That's amazing information. For those of you that haven't started yet, pay attention to Kelly.
And then now, let me ask more automation that I would say to definitely have. We actually have a turn-by-turn video as well as laminated maps in the truck that we rent with the house, as well as we send them a picture of the map and we send them a turn-by-turn description and a Google pin. So 5 different ways of figuring out where you are on this completely streetless, street signless island. And Kisilov is very similar. Like, there has to be a lot of information in order to get to where you need to be.
Now, again, depending on where your properties are, you may not have that as an issue, because mine are all in an area where they're all on Google Maps. So as soon as you put the address in, it comes right up on Google Maps where they're supposed to go, and it tells them when they're there. And so we don't have that particular problem, but I can see where that would be an issue, because you're out away from where a lot of this is published on Google Maps. So I can see where that's definitely an issue where you need to have more details, more information. So that's great information for everyone that's listening. So anyway, Kelly, did you learn all of this the hard way, or did you take a course? Did you follow in someone else's footsteps, or did this kind of unfold as you were getting guests and you said, oh, here's a problem, we need to find a solution?
So I would love to say, hey, I took a course and it was all clear to me. However, I spent $1,500 on a course that was so superficial and so useless. And so when I started really digging in and trying to find solutions to the problems that I could foresee, you know, and I did that by actually staying in my places, right? I stayed in each of them for a week or two just to figure out, hey, what are the problems that are going to happen with this house? And when I'd come up with a problem, I would immediately try and sort out what that solution was. And what I'd say is that I ran into issues with not knowing who to talk to find out if it was Airbnb allowed. I had issues where I had to figure out how to do tax ramifications. I had to, you know, there's just so many nuanced items. And so as I started to write all those things down so that I could repeat them, because repeatability is how you scale, you know, and I was really writing those for some kind of virtual assistant that I make believe virtual assistant that I'd have in the future. And in the process thereof, I really started creating my own course, just because of the fact that I was so disturbed at spending $1,500 on something that just wasn't very useful. And so I priced mine pretty reasonable, $200 or $290 bucks at most. And I feel like it's a lot more all encompassing, because it's a lot of the things that A, you want to think about aesthetically, and B, that you have to think about in order to legally and functionally operate a B&B.
Well, it sounds amazing. And can they find all of that on your website at croninscastles.com?
They can. They can also find any of the podcasts that I've been on before.
Okay, perfect, perfect. And you're going to get copies of this one as well. And for folks that are listening, I'm going to throw my website up there. It's kathybinner.com. And I also have a course like Kelly. And then I have a mastermind. And so what I do is, if some folks are really wanting to start and you don't know where to go or how to get started, you kind of get some handholding in our mastermind. And we've got several folks that are lined up to start that mastermind with me. So I'll just toss that out there, and you can find all of my information at kathybinner.com. Now, again, we talked about where you said it has to be, you know, aesthetically pleasing and all of that. Where do you get your supplies, your furniture, your linens? Where does all of that come from? Because now you're on an island in Puerto Rico. Where in the world do you get all of that?
Well, so I think some of that is managing expectations, because there's no chance that someone's going to show up to my island paradise and find something that's Pottery Barn. You know, there's just... Okay. Can't be done. It took almost a month to get a fridge delivered. And
oh, wow.
And I'll tell you that the only thing harder than getting a fridge delivered to the island of Vieques, Puerto Rico, is getting a bathtub delivered to Kisilov, Alaska. So we have plenty of funny tales to tell about, you know, trying to get those things actually in place. What I'd say is that everything is very bespoke. So, you know, if somebody wants to come and see cookie cutter furniture or supplies, it's not going to happen at my places. And a lot of things that I have are things that are repurposed, because of the fact that, frankly, we just can't make it happen, right? So, for example, we have, you know, we have these beautiful chairs that my next door neighbor repurposed and put, put new fabric on them. And then I just stained today. And they're amazing and gorgeous and wonderful. And you will never see them in another B&B ever. And so I can't tell you where to you know, source a lot of things. I do source a fair number on Amazon because most of the time Amazon will ship to, most of the time Amazon will ship to the places that we have.
Okay. Well, how about bed linens? Because that you do have to kind of turn over occasionally. Yep. Where do you get your bed linens and towels and those sorts of things?
Those I all get through Amazon. And what I'll say is that I've done a fair bit of like trying to figure out my favorites so that I can have a ready to go shopping list in my, both in my course and for anyone setting up one of my B&Bs. So,
okay.
Very, these are my favorites. Here we go. And I will say that, you know, we've taken some liberties with some of the items that go into it. We have these amazing, you know, black, almost magnetic looking silverware that we use in Alaska. We have these really like vibrant blue and rainbow, just amazing forks and knives and such that we use in Vieques. And we have these, you know, this cookware that is deep blue, and it's just, gosh, it works really well on the induction, and it's just really, really beautiful to try and use. And let's face it, I can't cook to save a soul, so I have to have something pretty to do while I'm watching my food burn, and that's where we go. And so we do try and yum it up in the places that we can. For example, you know, it's incredibly impossible to get a bathtub up to Kisilov, Alaska. However, we got the prettiest bathtub that you could possibly imagine, a really big soaker tub. And, you know, we bridged the gap on having a tiny bathroom by having a mineral salt bar that you can, you know, sample the mineral salts and like, and make your own mix in that bathtub just to, you know, to make it okay that it's small.
Okay. And so again, you said early on in the podcast that that folks like the quirkiness of your locations. And I can see that because again, if you travel very often, sometimes you want something different. That's the whole idea of going somewhere different is you want it to be, you know, more in the environment where the property is located. I mean, that's the whole reason you're going there. So I get it. I get that. And so now you've got these gals that as you call them, caretakers that do your cleaning. They also do your maintenance. If there's
a little
maintenance stuff, and they have connections. If you have a bigger maintenance issue, they have those connections locally on who can take care of it for you. What happens when you have a maintenance issue and you've got a big booking coming in? How do you handle that?
So we thankfully haven't had a situation like that yet. What I will say is that we've been able to manage with a one-day window on each of them. And I do choose to take a little bit less income in order to have that one-day window, but the stress is so much less. I think my heart is pretty happy with that choice. I never wanted to do this and then have it be something that stresses me out more than my day job. My day job is stressful enough. I wanted this to be something that would add to my life. And every time that I add a game or every time that I, you know, try to make something a little bit prettier or a little bit more bespoke for our guests, you know, that's something that really gives me a lot of happiness. The one day window is really when we're talking about not booking, you know, not having someone leave at 11 a.m. and then come in at 3 p.m. but really having a full 24 hours in between those two. So the earliest booking window would be the 3 p.m. the next day. And we don't do short bookings. We generally do 3-day bookings and beyond. And in Alaska, we'll probably be doing a little bit longer than that just because the turns are a little bit harder. So we tend to run a little bit lower in profits than some of the other places on island, but it's definitely one of those things where I also feel like I have less problems.
Right. Because you have longer booking, so you don't have somebody coming every day and you're flipping that every day. And so if they're checking out at 11 o'clock on one day, you let it go a whole overnight into 3 p.m. the following day. And that gives you what you're calling that one day window. If you have a maintenance issue, it gives you some time to get someone in there to fix it. Or if you need to replace something, it just gives you some time. So now you're not totally stressed that you've got like 2 hours before your guest shows up and you've got a problem you need to fix. I get that.
We also have a full list of all of the different subsets that we might need during that stay. So, you know, we have a plumber listed, we have a maintenance person listed, we have kind of everything that we can possibly, an electrician, or like six electricians, because none of them stay on island. And we have all of those listed on a spreadsheet with allowances. Like, you can spend up to $300 without calling us for our caretakers, so okay, that all of that is automated up to a certain point that I'm comfortable with. And that really helps as well. And then we also have a cleaning list that is actually broken out so that you have pictures and descriptions of each room and how that should look when it's set up and where everything lives in our supply closet, so that if I have to have someone come in pinch hit on my cleaning, you know, they already have a user manual for how to put that house back together.
Okay. And because what some of you that have not done this yet may not know, that Kelly and I do know, is that some guests you can barely tell they've stayed and some guests you can barely tell they've left. And so your cleaning is all over the map. Sometimes it's what we call a quick flip and sometimes it's not so quick. Because everything has to be put back in place. Everything has to be touched. You know, some guests move everything around. They move curtains around. They move furniture around. They move dishes around. And I'm not sure, you know, what the thinking process is for the guest, but for the host, you have a way that you want that property to look when your new guest walks through the door. So now your caretakers, they have to have a thorough checklist and pictures, and they have to know exactly what you expect so that you know that your guests are getting the same product every time they book. They're getting a good, clean, whatever the location is, and they're not getting, you know, curtains tied up. I've had guests tie curtains up because they wanted more light. I've had guests pin curtains together because they wanted it more dark. You know, I've had guests move the dresser over because they wanted to, you know, have it closer to their bed. I've had guests move the dresser the other way because they didn't want it close to their bed. And so that's the kind of stuff that once you're in this space, you realize that, you know, guests will be guests and you have to kind of roll with that. But your caretakers have to kind of know how you want your property to look so that when your guest comes through the door, they get that wow factor. And that's what we're all after. We want them to feel that we've over-delivered every time they come through the door instead of under-deliver. So, you know,
I never want someone to feel like it's not their house for the day.
Right. Right. So I don't get too concerned about that. I have a couple of girlfriends that said they could never do short-term rentals because they absolutely would, go crazy if somebody started moving their furniture and stuff around. And I said, you know, you just got to roll with it if you're doing this, because you know what, we're smiling all the way to the bank at the other end. It's all good. It's all good. I had someone put, you know, I have an antique little tea cart and I had somebody put the water carafe right on the second shelf of the tea cart, which is all wood, and it left a water ring. And so of course I'm on Google, you know, how do I get rid of a water ring on my antique tea cart? And it turned out okay, but I had to have a little self-talk and I said to myself, you know what, at the end of the day, it's a tea cart. It's okay. It's okay. And at the end of the day, if I have to replace a tea cart out of however many years I've been doing this, you know, that's really not bad. And so your first reaction is, oh no. And then once you, you know, kind of embrace that a little bit, you're like, it's all good. It's all good. It's all in a day's work. So I get that. Now, how do you handle problem guests? If you have a guest that has an issue, have you had any problems and how have you handled that?
We've had a few problems. One was a third party booking. And I think one thing to think about is the fact that if you are properly insured, you know, if you really hedge your bets in a lot of ways, even their worst, is not enough to really ruin your day, right? So what we do is we actually use Safely Insurance, which actually insures the stay of the guest. And so I'm not reliant on Airbnb to actually pay me out for anything that's broken. And with that properly insurance, you know, I love my places dearly and I would never want them to burn down. And neither of them are insurable because they're just crazy houses. And so to some extent, I self-insure everything. But what I'd say is that with Safely, you know, I'm never, ever praying for this, but by gosh, if it burns to the ground, like if everything was damaged and if everything was done, I would be able to build back new in a better way than was originally there. And so I just make sure that I have enough safety in what I'm doing that either my profit center is enough that I've put aside enough that I can do something better, or I have that properly insured, that Safely insurance that can help like bridge that gap. And what I'll say is this, just recently, we actually had a situation where both my Vieques house was threatened by a hurricane, and the Kasilov house was threatened on the exact same day by a typhoon, a typhoon. And between the two, you okay? Yeah. Between the two, I had some just massive issues on both ends. And so it was definitely one of those things where I was super glad that both of them were predominantly paid off, and, you know, and we would have been ahead either way because I made sure that the value of the land was at least half of what my overall purchase was for that item, whether it be the Vieques or Kasilov. And I just made sure that everything was as safe as I possibly could for both of them. And at the end of the day, like, if something happens, so be it. At least I've got a little coverage.
So I just want to make sure that we're saying this correctly. You're saying Safely Insurance, like Safely Insurance.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's the name of the product. It's called Safely Yep. Insurance. Okay.
And they insure per day. So they insure per your rental day. And the other nice thing about that is that they do your guest check. So they actually check out the information that's provided by your guest to Safely. You have to do a little bit of manual work for asking for that information, but they double check that the guest has not had bad reviews or is a real person and that their ID is correct and all that good stuff.
Okay. So what is it, a percentage then of the night's booking that pays for Safely?
It's roughly $11 a night, and they actually, okay. You know, it's based on the value of your property. It's based on the number of guests and things like that. So every property is a little bit different. They give you a full year or 6 month estimate. But what I'll say is kind of incredible is you can write that as a charge to the guests, especially if you're off platform, if you're not on Airbnb, because Airbnb doesn't really have a spot to put it. But you can actually charge it directly to your guests, just like your cleaning fee.
Okay. Now that's if you're on Airbnb. Now for some folks that are not on Airbnb, like for example, I have my short-term rental on, I have on booking.com. I'm also on Expedia. I'm on Travelocity. I'm on hotels.com. I'm on a lot of those other OTAs, which is considered an online travel agency for those of you that don't know what OTA is. And so when I get folks, sometimes I don't have any information on them other than what they've put on the reservation before they walk through the door. Whereas with Airbnb, those guests have been verified. And then, like you said, you can charge them for the Safely insurance. And I don't know how I would do that with those other OTAs.
So you actually can't do it on Airbnb. You have to do it through a secondary message.
Okay.
And so with Airbnb, you can't ask them for their information either. So any of the OTAs other than a direct book, you won't be able to ask that information until your first message after they booked. And okay. So generally what I put in my booking is that all users must be verified. Every guest must have a government issued ID, and just asking for that information for my Safely insurance. And there will be a charge of $11 a day for Safely insurance to ensure that you are covered and I am covered. And that That really does a ton in terms of just making sure that my guests are, you know, are not worried that I'm going to charge them for a $300 vase but they break or something like that. Clearly, I don't put $300 vases in my Airbnbs, but you know what I mean.
I get it. And now the guests probably, they don't have a problem paying that either because it's protecting them.
It's like renter's insurance, but it's very short term.
Okay, good to know. I'm going to make a note of that one. See, I learned something new today. Yes. So I'm definitely going to make a note of that. So again, how can our listeners connect with you, Kelly? Because there's going to be some folks that really everything you've said has resonated with them. And they're like, oh, I've got more questions. I want to talk to Kelly. So how can they connect with you?
So many ways. You are very welcome to direct message me on Facebook. You're welcome to direct message Cronin's Castles on Facebook. You're welcome to go to our website and direct message me there. You're very welcome to message me from any of the houses in a nutshell, Alaska. Elevated Solitude, Utah, or the Vieques Sea House, Puerto Rico. Any of those things will get you to me, and I love connecting with people. So I don't care what stage you're at in this whole thing. If there's anything I can do or answer for you, please let me know. I would love to see everyone be able to do this. And I think that everyone yes. can. And I will say that, you know, if you don't think that you can, call me. Let me talk you into it because I guarantee you it's possible.
You know what? I want to second that. Kelly, that is great information. I didn't think I could do it at first, and it has generated enough cash flow for me that I've actually purchased additional properties with the cash flow that I'm getting from the short-term rentals. And I just recently purchased a midterm rental for traveling nurses. Kelly and I were talking about that when we first got started on the conversation tonight. And that's been a goldmine for me as well. And so I plan on adding more short-term rentals to my portfolio. I have long-term, I have the midterm, and I have short-term. And my plan is to add more short-term because that's the highest profit margin. So for those of you that are listening, you always have to have a plan B. So don't forget that. And so if you're out there looking for properties, the first thing you want to do when you work your numbers is you want to make sure that if you put a long-term renter in there that you'd be okay. Your numbers work with a long-term renter. If that's all you could do is just rent that out and hold it long-term and somebody signs a year's lease on it, and they're just going to pay you every month and they might stay, you know, 5 years in that location. Make sure that you're getting enough income on that long term that it covers all of your expenses. And if all it does is cover your expenses, it's still a win-win because somebody else is buying you a piece of property. And so depending on, you know, I always say all the time, the only difference between a good real estate deal and a bad real estate deal is time. And because if you have one that the numbers are too close, over time, that property is going to gain appreciation. Your mortgage payment is going to go down. Your rents are going to go up, and eventually that so-so deal that you thought maybe wasn't quite such a good deal is going to turn out to be a really good deal. And you're going to look back and say, boy, I'm glad I bought that when I did. But if you then go with midterm rentals, you can collect, and this is just a ballpark, but you can collect about twice the rent that you would normally get for a long-term rental. And then if you go all the way to short-term rental, you're going to get about four times the amount of rent that you would get for a long-term rental. But keep in mind, every time you switch from long-term to midterm and then midterm to short-term, the workload goes up because those folks are moving out and moving on more often. And someone has to go in there and do what we say, flip the property and get it ready for the next tenant. And so the more you have midterm and short-term, the more work it is, but the more profit it is. So it depends on where you are, what it is that your goals are. And don't forget, you can have a goal, but you're not going to get there unless you have a plan. So you can pick the goal that you want to have. Oh, I want to have four short-term rentals, you know, by the end of next year. But unless you have a plan to get those four short-term rentals, you're still going to be saying that's your goal a year from now. So you have to start. So get in touch with Kelly. You can reach her on croninscastles.com and you can reach me at kathybinner.com. on my website, I also have a link where you can just click through if you just want to have a chat with me, and it'll schedule you a time to chat directly with me if anyone's interested in that. And Kelly has offered that she is welcome to chat with everyone as well. So Beth, Debbie, Julia, Muhammad, let me see, do we have anybody else? We just have four. We had Olivia, I think she had to jump off. If you have any questions, go ahead and pop those into the chat. And we'll wait just a second or two here to see if there's any questions out there from anyone. We are recording this. And if anybody wants to hear the replay, again, it will be at kathybinner.com. And just scroll down to the free meetup for the ins and outs of opening a bed and breakfast, guest house, Airbnb, VRBO. Just scroll down to those, that free meetup, and you can click through and get all of our replays. We have been interviewing folks just like Kelly for a couple of years now. So we've got lots of replays there, super information. Everybody's story is different. And if you listen through to some of those replays, you'll really get a good feel for what it's like to have short-term rentals. So Kelly, thank you so much for being on with us this evening. I really appreciate you. I can't wait to come and visit one or both of your properties. I love the locations, and I love that they are kind of quirky. That's what makes it fun. So I'm definitely going to visit Cronin's Castles and maybe hit that book now button.
So good question, Beth. I think that the biggest answer there is that I bought in places that just...
Okay, I'm gonna repeat Beth's question because it comes out to us, just to the host and panelists.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sorry.
It's what made you buy property in Puerto Rico and Alaska. Wouldn't it be easier to have it all local?
It definitely would. It definitely would. However, I wanted to buy properties in places that would allow me to travel to them as part of, you know, as part of my overall ending, you know, ending business. And to be honest with you, like, going from Milwaukee to Waukesha in Wisconsin just did not have the appeal that going to Alaska really would. So it made it incredibly hard, probably 20 times harder, but it was so magical to have a place where wild horses ran through your yard, or a mama moose and her two babies, Bullwinkle and Rocky, like, live in your yard. Amazing stuff, right? And am I going to get that in Wisconsin? Maybe, but probably not as likely. So definitely, you know, definitely trying the whole buying local thing now. We have 80 acres in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, that we're turning into a glamping area, putting a treehouse and some bell tents and some vintage trailers and a converted bus. But definitely, you know, definitely enjoy the fact that we have places kind of outside the scope, and, you know, and we like being able to offer things that are just a little bit different than everybody else. You know, we're not cookie cutter people. So if you want to stay in a geodesic dome, if you want to stay in a roundhouse, a traditional roundhouse in Vieques, like, we got you covered.
I love that. I love that, because it is different. And we have some different properties close to us. We have some folks, we have an area close to where I live called Hocking Hills, and it's a great vacation area. A lot of tourists come in to go hiking in Hocking Hills. And there is a friend of mine, they bought storage containers and turned them into tiny houses. And so you can do just about anything. Depends on your zoning, though. Be sure you double check your zoning. If you need help with that, get in touch with me, because I'm kind of the zoning queen. I can help you through what questions to ask and how to find out all of those right answers before you take the plunge and spend the money. So Beth, I hope that answered your question on what made her buy where she did. Debbie says to thank you, ladies. Beth said she now understands. Mine is more traditional. I'm right outside of Columbus, Ohio, in Canal Winchester. My short-term rental is in my home, and I have three rooms inside my house. I rent them all separately, just like you would a hotel room. And each of my rooms has its own bathroom and two double beds. And we look very traditional. And, you know, so it's a nice, comfortable place to stay when you're traveling through. But we're probably not the destination like Kelly is. Kelly is more of the destination. You want to go there because you want to go there, you know, and stay in one of her properties. So keep that in mind. So it depends on, again, what your goals are And then once you have your goals, then you have to start putting together a plan. And I can help you with that plan. And after talking with Kelly, I'm sure Kelly can help you with that plan. So touch base and let us know if you have any other questions. And with that, we're going to go for this evening. Kelly, I did record this. I'm going to send you all the links. Feel free to use the links however you wish on your end. And then I will upload them at kathybenner.com. And so if anybody wants the replay, just go to kathybenner.com, scroll down to the free meetup for the bed and breakfast and click through and get all the replays. So Kelly, thank you again.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
I know. I love it. And I get to meet people all over the world. I love this. So, and thank you so much for being on with us. And thank you, Beth and Debbie, Julia, Muhammad, and Olivia was with us earlier. Thank you guys for joining us, and be sure and click through and get the replays. So we will see everyone next time. Bye, everybody.